All right, it's 9 o'clock on a Thursday night, and it is time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. And we're going to start off by saying that Free Radio Santa Cruz, where the Earth First Update is produced, is celebrating its 15th year on the air. And we'll be having a birthday party here in Santa Cruz on Saturday, November 27th at the Kumbwa Jazz Center. That's at 302 Cedar Street. We'll have music and speakers. We'll have birthday cake, a prize for the best pirate costume. We'll have a raffle for pirate booty. We will have some bands playing Superior Olive, Sweet Jam, and a whole bunch of other stuff for you, including yours truly, Uncle Dennis. All of that takes place starting at 6 o'clock on Saturday, March 27th at the Kumbwa Jazz Center, 302 Cedar Street in Santa Cruz. I will see you there. And let's get on to some other announcements here. The California Native Plant Society, Santa Cruz County Chapter Habitat Restoration Team will be having a restoration this coming Saturday, March 20th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Bonnie Dune Ecological Reserve. This project will be a special treat. We will be working at the Bonnie Dune Ecological Preserve, a 552-acre nature preserve northeast of Santa Cruz in the Santa Cruz Mountains. The reserve protects several rare and endangered plant and animal species within an area known as the Santa Cruz Sand Hills, an ancient seabed containing fossilized marine animals. The land was purchased in 1989 by the Nature Conservancy, which deeded the property to the state and is now managed by the California Department of Fish and Game. We'll be helping the reserve staff with containment of invasive non-native Genista mansipelusana, whatever that is. French broom, we all know what it is. Spring is here, and it should be a great day for some broom pulling. Come on out, join us at this unique biological hotspot in the Santa Cruz Mountains. How to get there? Go Mission Street West and take Highway 1 to Bonnie Dune Road. Take a right and go inland up the hill about 3 miles. Just past the wine tasting room on your right, make a right turn onto Martin Road, go a mile, and they will meet you at the old firehouse on Martin Road. The Habitat Restoration Team is a volunteer group working to restore native habitats in the parks and protected lands in Santa Cruz County. Their program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Wear comfortable layered clothing. Bring something to drink and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine, but it's going to be shiny this Saturday. But if things get particularly unpleasant, they'll call a day. It a day. Tools are provided. Bring gloves and water. For more information, contact Linda. Her number, 831-462-4041. That's 831-462-4041. Or contact her by email at redwoodrn, that's REDWDRN, at pacbell.net, or visit their website at www.cruzcnps.org. And had a chance to see Linda the other day at a reception for the California Conservation, or California Coastal Commission. Well, actually, it wasn't a reception, it was a public hearing. Yeah, that one. And a sushi chef and restaurant has been charged with serving endangered whale in this story by Jeremy Polofsky, editing by Sandra Mayer, and all courtesy of Thomson Reuters. A California sushi chef and restaurant in which he worked have been charged with illegally serving meat from an endangered sea whale. That's SEI, the Justice Department announced today. Kiyoshira Yamamoto, 45, and the parent company of the popular restaurant The Hump in Santa Monica were charged late Wednesday with violating the Marine Mammal Protection Act, which makes it illegal to sell any kind of whale meat. The case stemmed from informants who ordered whale meat at the restaurant in October of 2009 and evolved into a sting operation by U.S. Wildlife and Customs officials who observed whale meat being served at the restaurant last week. Someone should not be able to walk into a restaurant and order a plate of endangered species, U.S. Attorney Andre Birat Jr. said in a statement. According to an affidavit filed with the criminal complaint, two confidential informants last week ordered whale meat during a sting operation while Wildlife and Customs officers sat at the sushi bar observing. The sushi chef went to a car in the parking lot and brought back a package of whale meat into the restaurant where it was opened at the sushi bar and sliced the meat to serve, according to the document. After initially ignoring questions from a customer at the sushi bar about the meat, a customer to the right of the official then asked the sushi chef about the meat product, and the sushi chef quietly said it was whale, the affidavit said. The plate of whale meat was then delivered to the two informants' table. A lawyer for the restaurant and chef was not immediately available for comment. The charge carries a penalty of up to 1 year in prison and faces fines of $100,000 for individuals and $200,000 for organizations. The case is USA versus Typhoon Restaurant, doing business as The Hump Restaurant and Koyoshiro Yamamoto, Central District of California. And we will keep you up to date on where that goes. And an activist has been arrested over boarding a Japanese whaling ship. This story by Isabel Reynolds, with additional reporting by Chika Osaka, Yoko Nishikawa, and Yoko Kibota, with editing by Paul Tate, all courtesy of Thomson Reuters. Japan's Coast Guard on Friday arrested an anti-whaling activist from New Zealand who boarded a whaling vessel in the Antarctic following clashes between hunters and environmentalists, a spokesperson has said. Media helicopters hovered overhead as a flotilla of ships sailed into Tokyo Bay, and Pete Bethune of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society was brought ashore after being held on board for the entire four-week trip from Antarctica. Sea Shepherd Conservation Society said the 44-year-old Bethune had been planning to attempt a citizen's arrest of the Japanese whaling vessel's skipper when he boarded the ship in February, and that it has arranged legal representation in Japan for him. The hardline anti-whaling group's regular attempts to block the annual whale hunt have sparked irritation in Japan, where the government says its whaling is an important cultural tradition. Of course, different people and countries may have different feelings towards whaling, but Sea Shepherd's vicious actions are dangerous and cannot be accepted, Japanese Prime Minister Yukio Hatoyama told reporters. It's a matter of course that he has been arrested. He should be probed and tried in Japan based on the truth, but I think this will not hurt ties with Australia or New Zealand, he said. Bethune, the captain of the 80 Gill, a high-tech vessel that was damaged and sunk, I might say, in a collision with a Japanese whaling ship in January, approached Japan's Shonan Maru 2 on a jet ski, breached anti-boarding nets, and climbed aboard in darkness on February 15th. Bethune was arrested on the ship on arrival in Tokyo, the Coast Guard spokesman said. Crowds of media and a handful of pro-whaling demonstrators were awaiting his arrival on the pier, which was blocked from view by blue tarpaulins. We want the Japanese government to punish the activists as severely as possible under Japanese law and ask the New Zealand government to remove the 80 Gill's ship registration, said protester Shuhei Nishimura. A Coast Guard official later told Reuters Bethune appeared to be in good health and was answering questions readily. Kyoto News Agency quoted Sea Shepherd head Paul Watson as saying it was, quote, very strange the aggrieved captain is the one who is going to be arrested. We are rallying a lot of support in New Zealand and Australia for Pete. He may be considered a criminal in Japan, but he's a hero in Australia and New Zealand, Watson said. Bethune could face imprisonment for up to 3 years or a fine of up to 100,000 yen. That's about $1,100, according to Japanese media. And I'm not sure whether that's Australian or New Zealand or American dollars, but who knows. Last month, Australia set Japan a November deadline to stop Southern Ocean whaling or face an international legal challenge. Some legal experts say Japan's hunt breaches international laws such as the Antarctic Treaty System. A court challenge would lead to provisional orders for Japan to halt whaling immediately ahead of a full hearing. Commercial whaling was banned under a 1986 moratorium, but Japan still hunts whales for which it says are research purposes. And as we read in the previous story, the meat mostly ends up on dinner tables. Moving to biological diversity news. Hawaii to crack down on monk seal killers. In good news for one of the world's most imperiled marine mammals, a Hawaiian senator introduced legislation that would make it a felony to kill or harm Hawaiian monk seals and other endangered species. Within the last year, two male monk seals and one pregnant female fell victim to deadly shootings, even as the seal's population is expected to drop below 1,000 within a few years due to starvation, climate change, entanglement in marine debris, habitat loss, and other threats. Last year saw the lowest number of pups ever produced during breeding season. The population is declining by about 4% annually. The Hawaiian monk seal's cousin, the Caribbean monk seal, was announced extinct in 2008. In a response to a scientific petition from the Center for Biological Diversity and Allies last year, the National Marine Fisheries Service announced it would designate federally protected critical habitat for the Hawaiian monk seals on the main Hawaiian islands, which the species are increasingly populating and which may provide its last sanctuary for recovery. And action is brewing to save 800 species from pesticide poisoning. To save more than 800 endangered species from death and harm from toxic pesticides, the Center for Biological Diversity filed notice of intent to sue the Environmental Protection Agency over registration of almost 400 chemicals that threaten imperiled species, as well as human health. The EPA has violated the Endangered Species Act by failing to consult with federal wildlife agencies about pesticides' impacts on species across the nation before approving them for use. The agency has also violated the Migratory Bird Treaty Act by registering pesticides known to harm and kill sensitive migratory birds. The notice of intent seeks to protect 887 at-risk animal and plant species, including the Florida panther, coho salmon, California condor, and mountain yellow-legged frog. We've already forced the EPA to consult on the impacts of scores of pesticides on a suite of California species, such as the California red-legged frog and Delta smelt. Said the center's Jeff Miller, for too long this agency's oversight has been abysmal, allowing the pesticide industry to unleash a virtual plague of toxic chemicals into our environment. And the center has gone to court for the Mexican gray wolf. The Center for Biological Diversity sued the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for its failure to act on their petition to grant the Mexican gray wolf its own place on the endangered species list. The Mexican wolf is distinct from other gray wolves and should be recognized as such with its own Endangered Species Act protection as an endangered subspecies or distinct population segment. But the Mexican wolf is currently lumped together under the act with gray wolves elsewhere in the United States. The service has missed its November deadline to respond to the Center for Biological Diversity's petition from last summer to fix that. Earning its own place on the endangered species list would require the development of a new Mexican wolf recovery plan, which is crucial since the current one is almost three decades old and contains no numeric population distribution or genetic diversity targets. It would also give better guidance for managing the sole existing Mexican gray wolf population, which is hovering at around just 52 animals and two breeding pairs at the end of 2008. And grazing private cows on public lands remains dirt cheap. In bad news for the desert tortoise, Mexican spotted owl, Oregon spotted frog, and countless other endangered species, federal agencies have announced they won't increase the fee in 2010 for each cow and calf the livestock industry grazes on 258 million acres of western public lands. Now at a paltry $1.35, just 12 cents more than it was in 1966, the fee falls short of market rates, which are about $10 per animal, far short of what agencies spend to administer the grazing permits, and most importantly, far short of the needed revenue to correct livestock grazing's dire ecological effects. Besides wrecking havoc on habitat for species of all kinds, livestock grazing is the main factor contributing to unnaturally severe western wildfires, watershed degradation, soil loss, and the spread of invasive plants. The Center for Biological Diversity and other groups have petitioned the federal government to increase the grazing fee to account for administrative and ecological costs. We don't intend to let the federal grazing program continue to make the public subsidize public land destruction and species endangerment. And take action to protect beluga habitat in response to a notice of intent to sue by the Center for Biological Diversity last December. The National Marine Fisheries Service finally proposed protecting critical habitat for imperiled beluga whales in Alaska's polluted Cook Inlet. Once numbering more than 1,000, Cook Inlet belugas are now down to about 300 in their habitat in the fastest developing watershed in Alaska. But the Fisheries Service is under pressure from the oil and coal industries, as well as Alaska's congressional delegation, to slash the habitat protections the beluga needs so badly. The service needs to hear from you to make sure that its habitat proposal is expanded, not reduced, to ensure the beautiful white whale's survival. And silence? Well, that's an endangered commodity, too. According to audio ecologist Gordon Hempton, Silence isn't necessarily noiseless. It's simply the complete absence of all audible mechanical vibrations, the presence of everything undisturbed. It's rapidly becoming too much to ask for. In fact, Hampton says there are fewer than a dozen suitable sites, sizable sites of silence remaining in the United States and none in Europe. Even in our national parks today, says Hampton, despite laws to protect them, you are much more likely to be hearing noise pollution, particularly overhead aircraft, than you are to be hearing only the native sounds of the land. Why does silence matter? Through it, we are given the opportunity to not only heal, but discover something incredible, the presence of life interwoven. And like all music, good or bad, it affects us deeply. And yours truly, Uncle Dennis, can attest to that. I spent 3 weeks hiking in the High Sierra of California from Kings Canyon into Sequoia and then down the Kern River. And we heard aircraft every day. And that's about as far away from civilization as you can get in California. And still, jet aircraft, particularly military jet aircraft, were present pretty much constantly, even at night. On to our next story. American pica has been denied U.S. protection. Ignoring science and the law, the Obama administration denied the Center for Biological Diversity's petition to grant Endangered Species Act protection to the American pica. The small mountain-dwelling mammal is adapted to cold temperatures and is seriously threatened by global warming. It can die when exposed to temperatures as mild as 78 degrees Fahrenheit for a few hours and need insulated snowpack to survive in the winter. Warming-caused high temperatures have already led to dramatic losses of low-elevation pika populations. If pikas don't get federal protection soon, they'll be pushed upslope until they run out of habitat. As pika experts wrote in the journal Bioscience, they're already at the top of the mountain. If you heat that up substantially, there's no place for them to go. And Mexico is going to reintroduce wolves near the U.S. border. The Mexican government will reintroduce 5 endangered Mexican gray wolves to northeastern Sonora, leaving the wolves within easy roaming distance of the Sky Islands ecosystem of southern Arizona and New Mexico. It's a good move for the wolves, which would greatly benefit from connectivity between their habitat in Mexico and the Blue Range Wolf Recovery Area further north. The livestock industry isn't exactly happy about the reintroduction, to say the least, but any wolves that wander into the country will enjoy the full protection of the Endangered Species Act, unlike the experimental non-essential wolves already in the Southwest. Mexico's move comes just at the latest count of Mexican wolves in the United States dropped dangerously low to just 42 animals, 10 less than were counted last year, possibly due to inbreeding depression stemming from past government wolf trapping and shooting that reduced the population's genetic diversity. The Center for Biological Diversity went to court to save the persecuted animal, filing suit to force the federal response to our petition to reshape and reinvigorate the Mexican gray wolf recovery effort. And the Verde River is in danger. Officials resist a ruling on Arizona pipeline. To save Arizona's life-sustaining Verde River from a massive pipeline that would dry it up, in 2009, the Center for Biological Diversity sued the city of Prescott for illegally withholding records on the pipeline, but Prescott is still withholding them. In fact, the city is trying to impose a 3-week delay on the lawsuit's ruling, and it's now been illegally withholding the records for 20 months. So last week, the center submitted a motion to stop the delay. The 45-mile Big Chino Ranch pipeline would suck 13 million gallons of water per day from the Big Chino aquifer to fuel rampant development in central Arizona. The Verde River relies on springs from the aquifer for 80% of its base flow, without which the rushing waterway would be a dry wash. Many endangered species, including the desert nesting bald eagle, razorback sucker, round-tailed chub, and southwestern willow flycatcher, depend on the Verde River for survival. And feds propose budget cuts for species listing. Even with 1,000 U.S. species in desperate need of federal protection, as identified by the Center for Biological Diversity, the Obama administration has now proposed a cut in the budget for its Endangered Species Protection Program. That means even less funding for placing species on the endangered species list, helping those species recover, and enforcing laws to save protected species from harm, as well as a 9% cut in funds for conserving the 249 candidates that are officially recognized as deserving Endangered Species Act protection, but have already been pushed to the side, many of those for decades, due to lack of resources to aid them. To confront the administration's apparent indifference about saving our country's biodiversity, the center has launched a campaign to save 1,000 of the most endangered species in America by getting them on the endangered species list, keeping them there as long as necessary, and earning them protected critical habitat and recovery plans. And a suit has been filed to protect fish and frogs from California fish stocking. To save native trout, salmon, and amphibians from the impacts of millions of hatchery fish invading their home streams and lakes, the Center for Biological Diversity sued the California Department of Fish and Game over its harmful fish stocking program. In response to a previous center lawsuit last month, the department issued a report that was supposed to analyze and counteract the effects of its fish stocking, but as our suit shows, that report was a complete disappointment, utterly failing to protect species like Chinook salmon, mountain yellow-legged frogs, and long-toed salamanders. California Fish and Game has missed the mark with this review and failed to consider alternatives that better meet its mission of providing fishing opportunities and conserving native wildlife, said the center's Noah Greenwald. The agency needs to redo its report and propose measures to reduce the destructive impacts of fish elevation water dwellers. I'm not sure what that sentence means, but anyway. 2010, the year of the endangered tiger. Tigers are considered by the Chinese to be symbols of energy, courage, power, and good luck. But as millions of people across China rang in the Chinese New Year last Sunday, the outlook for real tigers across the globe is grim. Just a century, you might, unfortunately, this is a little dated now. Just a century ago, numbering more than 100,000 animals, tigers are now down to fewer than 3,000 in the wild, while their habitat has shrunk more than 90%. There's a good chance the species will be extinct in just 12 years, if things don't change pretty soon. Key threats include deforestation, hunting, and the illegal trade of tiger bones and body parts, as well as the illegal trade of tigers themselves. The United States alone holds an estimated 5,000-plus captive tigers, many of which are illegally kept as pets by private owners, sometimes in abhorrent conditions, like a tiger found in 2003 in a Harlem apartment in the center of New York. And 82 corals are going to get closer protection. In response to a scientific petition by the Center for Biological Diversity, the National Marine Fisheries Service announced it's launching a full status review to determine whether 82 corals deserve federal protections. The corals, threatened chiefly by global warming and ocean acidification, have been determined by the center to be the most imperiled species in U.S. waters, all of them faced with population declines of 30% or greater. The center has already earned the Endangered Species Act protection for elkhorn and staghorn coral, the first species to ever earn protection from global warming. The status review is an important step forward in protecting coral reefs, which scientists have warned may be the first worldwide ecosystem to collapse due to global warming, said Miyoko Sakashida, Oceans Director for the Center for Biological Diversity. Endangered Species Act protection can provide a safety net for corals on the brink of protection. And a massive Nevada water siphon has been stopped. In a huge win for the driest North American desert and the species that call it home, the Nevada Supreme Court has overturned dozens of water rights applications to pump groundwater up to 300 miles to shore up unsuitable growth in Las Vegas. If the Southern Nevada Water Authority were to mine the groundwater as intended, it would cause widespread desertification and would likely drive extinct desert springtails and endangered fish like the Moapa dace. The court's ruling is a result of a lawsuit by the Great Basin Water Network, a coalition of groups including the Center for Biological Diversity and Defenders of Wildlife. The Water Network plans to file protests against any water rights that are refiled. Justice has prevailed for now, said Bob Mraka, the Center Nevada conservation advocate. This decision in the state Supreme Court is a significant victory for the environment, the affected rural communities in Nevada and Utah, and due process and equal access to government. Maybe the most importantly, it allows the Clark County Commission and other local government members of the Southern Nevada Water Authority to step back and open a dialogue with the residents of Las Vegas to establish a vision and plan for long-term viability and sustainability. And the San Pedro River bulldozing has been stopped. In a victory for the endangered southwestern willow flycatcher and the southwest's last undammed river, the Center for Biological Diversity and Allies settled a lawsuit last week, stopping the seizure and bulldozing of a critical portion of Arizona's San Pedro River by Pinal County. The county had illegally seized the private and federal property and bulldozed a crossing through it for off-road vehicles, even though it was legally protected under a conservation easement. Oh, those desert people and their bulldozers. And the feds back away from a nuclear waste dump water grab. After protests filed by the Center for Biological Diversity, federal officials abandoned applications for groundwater withdrawal in Nevada that would facilitate a planned nuclear waste dump and pose a dire threat for the imperiled Amargosa toad in the process. The withdrawn water rights applications, 116 of them, would have supported a rail line to haul nuclear waste 90 miles from Las Vegas to the proposed dump on Yucca Mountain, far northwest of the city. The application sought to drain thousands of acres of feet of water per year from a groundwater basin that's already at an annual deficit, which would cause significant impairment of spring and stream flow in Nevada's Oasis Valley, home to the Amargosa toad, which is now down to fewer than 20 breeding populations. The center filed a scientific petition to protect the toad under the Endangered Species Act in 2008. And suits have been launched to save 93 species from extinction. As part of their campaign to save America's 1,000 most endangered species, the Center for Biological Diversity filed 4 lawsuits protecting 93 of them. The suits challenged the Obama administration's refusal to process scientific petitions to grant Endangered Species Act status to species across the nation, including the California golden trout, the Cactus ferruginous pygmy owl, I love that name for a very small bird, and red tree vole. In its first year in office, the Obama administration protected only 2 new species, the lowest first-year total of any president since Ronald Reagan. We had hoped this administration would move far more quickly to provide protection for endangered species than Bush did, but so far this has not been the case, said Noah Greenwald, endangered species director at the center. He says continued delay of protection places these 93 species in real jeopardy. And the Florida panther catfight heats up. In a blow to one of the world's most fascinating wild felines, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service denied a petition by the Center for Biological Diversity and Allies to protect 3 million acres of habitat for the Florida panther. The situation is so dire, we took emergency action and hauled the agency into court. With just 100 to 120 panthers left and deaths at a record level, there's no time to waste getting panther protection habitat back on track. As Florida's human population explodes with no regard for wildlife's needs, endangered panthers are dying brutal and unnatural deaths at unprecedented numbers. Last year, a record 17 panthers were killed by vehicles alone in southern Florida. Fewer than 100 Florida panthers now survive in the wild. The center's petition asks for 3 areas identified in the panthers' federal recovery plan to be set aside as critical habitat and spared from further development so the panther will have room to roam. Our lawsuit aims to make sure the critical habitat and the panther's recovery become a reality. Let's see here. Have we got a short one for you? There we go. And in our final story, carbon credits for clear cuts policy meets its demise. That's good news. Responding to public outcry and detailed analysis by the Center for Biological Diversity, the California Air Resources Board voted to rescind the harmful forest project protocol. The policy would have allowed forest landowners and clear cutters included to sell carbon credits to air polluters so those polluters could go on polluting instead of cutting their greenhouse gas emissions. Not only did the board vote to withdraw the policy, it also committed to review of environmental impacts to forests and the climate. Forest clear cutting is a threat to ecosystems, water, and wildlife habitat, and is no solution for climate change, said the center's Brian Nowicki. To avert the worst impacts of climate change, we need to dramatically reduce emissions now, not give the timber companies more reasons to keep liquidating America's forests. And we thank the Center for Biological Diversity for most of those previous stories. You can find their website at www.biologicaldiversity.org. If you would like to hear a podcast or download a podcast of tonight or a previous night's Earth First update, please go to the following webpage, www.h2opodcast.com. That's H, the number 2, O, podcast.com. When you get there, click on Earth and then select Earth First Radio. And we thank the folks at H2Opodcast.com for recording and archiving of those shows for our listeners. The Earth First Update is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz and is a project of Earth First Radio. I invite you to tune back in each and every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 and www.freakradio.org for the Earth First Update.